Accession number 28198, Reel 2.
Started dropping bombs and doing something unpleasant. And it was so low down that I was on the ground, of course. I could see it quite plainly against the sky, the Zeppelin, its two, what do you call it, underneath where the people lived. And the wretched sentry on the citadel, who was much higher up, been following with his Lewis gun and his fingers itching because he didn't dare fire until the last night. The citadel, as I say, was on the walls of the town, and the other side were open fields just where the citadel was. And this poor bloke on the Lewis gun had been doing this for about 4 or 5 nights. He couldn't stand any longer, and just as the Zeppelin cleared the walls, he let fly a magazine at it. And it shot out of sight like nobody's business. He must have got damn close to it. I never heard any more of that. I don't know what happened to him.
Just an observation, Zeppelin. They didn't drop bombs from it, didn't
they? Well, they were. They were. What they did, they were wanting to bomb GHQ, and every night GHQ was in complete and utter blackness. I mean, it wasn't a blackout like you'd see in places in Europe. It was utterly black. There wasn't a light any place. And this Zeppelin used to sail over GHQ and drop bombs on Parry Plage, which is the next street, the next place down the line. Then we had prisoners of war at GHQ, in the dungeons below Ye Castle Moat in the citadel, and an intelligence officer, the name of Blenner Hassett, who was a second lieutenant, no, he's a lieutenant in the intelligence corps, and he served 7 years in the Bavarian army as a German soldier. And he used to come and I don't know quite how they did it. These blokes they sent down there were special prisoners that the intelligence people up the line thought had information. And they used to send them down. They only had one at a time come down. They'd be shut in a dungeon below Ye Castle Moat and taken up for on the ramparts for exercise, and Blenner Hassett, when he got the papers, would come along and interview them, and if they were amenable to reason, he'd sit them on a bench, which always used to annoy me, and ply them with cigarettes in the sunshine and have long chats with them while he were marching up and down with his ruddy rifle.
That was before you went to work at the front, is it, or was that?
Yes, we were GHQ troops when I first went out. Before we went up the line, we did a month or two at just GHQ troops. I don't think it was a well-known battle. It was Oppy Wood is the only place near it, I can name. It was after the German retreat at a place called Bapaume. We went up to Oppy Wood, and we had to winkle the Germans out of there. And where I was wounded, the Germans and us were in the same trench. We occupied a bit of it, and they occupied a bit of it, and I was a section commander. Then an infantry platoon was a bombing section, a Lewis gun section, and two rifle sections. And I was a section commander of the bombing section. And we had the Germans next door to them, and I was conducting a trench bombing section to shoved them out and ran into a bit of opposition. We'd flung off all our bombs that we had, and more coming up. And I'd got the section strung out either side using their rifles, and ran into a bit of opposition. I got one Hun, and his pal got me as I was aiming at him. I was damn lucky, he was a rotten shot. He'd been half an inch higher or half an inch lower, I wouldn't be here.
That was in, what was the date of that? That was 19...
That was April 1917. Well, after the First World War, through friendly influence, I got a job in the Secretariat of the Merchant Shipbuilding Department of the Army, which perhaps I have a natural bent for, that type of job. But that was only a temporary one for the duration of the war, and in 1919 I started thinking about further employment, which I had no qualifications for, as I'd been a submarine telegraph cable operator before. And through a neighbour, I was put in contact with a director of one of the big rubber plantations who lived nearby. And I discussed the matter with him, and eventually I was offered a job as an assistant on the rubber plantation in Malaya, where my elder brother, who was killed in the war, had been. And I had two choices. One was an assistant on a big plantation, and the other was an assistant on a very small plantation. And rather foolishly, I thought that I would probably get on better on a small plantation with better chances of advancement than on the other, which was of course quite wrong. So I went out to this plantation, which was only 700 acres in Malaya, near the town of Klang, which is in Selangor. It is on a place called Merton Estate. And I didn't have any particular jobs to do, except I seemed to spend most of my time looking after Tamil women weeding, which is excessively boring, and nothing very exciting happened there, except one of the first flights from England to Australia, can't remember the name of the pilots now, passed overhead on their way, and the river Klang ran round the boundaries of estates and was very full of crocodiles. The only incident of particular excitement I can remember at this stage is that one morning I had come back to have my breakfast about 10 o'clock or so, and a male gang of Tamil labourers were working in the drain that ran down the edge of my garden, which had a most wonderfully beautiful hibiscus hedge round it. And there was frightful outcry and excitement. They went out to see what had happened and found that this man had been bitten by a snake. And being quite ignorant of laborers' habits, I asked if the snake was poisonous, and was assured that they always do, that the snake was poisonous, whether they knew it or not. So with my very limited medical knowledge, I got hold of my razor and slashed the finger where he'd been bitten, sucked it and spat it, and put in some crystals of permanganate of potash, which I happened to have in the bungalow, and then proceeded to put a tourniquet on his arm. The dresser, an Indian dresser, was quite incompetent to tell me I was being damn silly, and the only means of transport I had was to put him in the estate bullock cart and send him to the estate hospital, which was some 5 miles or so away, and his bullocks don't exceed the speed limit. By the time he got to the hospital and saw the doctor, as the doctor told me later, he was nearly dead from the tourniquet which I'd put on his arm, which I was told should have been eased up every 15 minutes or so. Another epidemic of health trouble we had on that particular estate was the labor force was mixed. There were Tamil Indians from northern Madras, Malayalam Indians from the southern part of Madras, I think, and also some Telugus. They all spoke different languages. Needless to say, I spoke very little of any. And the head man, head Indian labourer on the estate was a Malayalam. And there was a sudden mysterious epidemic of hysteria hit the labour force. And the head man had a cure which worked. Somebody would have a fit and he'd have to be very forcibly restrained and put into bed. And this Malayalam, he wasn't a priest, but he must have been some sort of a witch doctor, he used to put a little cube of goat's meat, I suppose it was, on a plate by the man's bedside and assure him that he'd been possessed by a devil, and when he woke up in the morning, if the meat turned black, it would mean that the devil had left him and gone into the meat, which undoubtedly had been doped by some means or other. Well, after 3 years on that estate, I went home on leave and made contact with the firm of Harrison and Crossfields, who own very many estates in Malaya, or owned very many estates in Malaya. And I got a job on Bradwell Estate near the town of Serembun in Negri Sembilan. And there were three assistants on that estate besides the manager. And my first main employment there was in the rubber factory.
the river Klang ran round the boundaries of estates and was very full of crocodiles. The only incident of particular excitement I can remember at this stage is that one morning I had come back to have my breakfast about 10 o'clock or so, and a male gang of Tamil labourers were working in the drain that ran down the edge of my garden, which had a most wonderfully beautiful hibiscus hedge round it, and there was frightful outcry and excitement, and I went out to see what had happened and found that this man had been bitten by a snake. And being quite ignorant of labourers' habits, I asked if the snake was poisonous, and was assured that they always do, that the snake was poisonous, whether they knew it or not. So with my very limited medical knowledge, I got hold of my razor and slashed the finger where he'd been bitten, sucked it and spat it, and put in some crystals of permanganate of potash, which I happened to have in the bungalow, and then proceeded to put a tourniquet on his arm. The dresser, an Indian dresser, was quite incompetent to tell me I was being damn silly, and the only means of transport I had was to put him in the estate bullock cart and send him to the estate hospital, which was some 5 miles or so away, and as bullocks don't exceed the speed limit, by the time he got to the hospital and saw the doctor, as the doctor told me later, he was nearly dead from the tourniquet which I'd put on his arm, which I was told should have been eased up every 15 minutes or so. Another epidemic of health trouble we had on that particular estate was the labour force was mixed. There were Tamil Indians from northern Madras, Malayalam Indians from the southern part of Madras, I think, and also some Telugus. They all spoke different languages. Needless to say, I spoke very little of any. And the head man, head Indian labourer on the estate was a Malayalam, and there was a sudden mysterious epidemic of hysteria hit the labour force, and the head man had a cure which worked. Somebody would have a fit and he'd have to be very forcibly restrained and put into bed, and this Malayalam, he wasn't a priest but he must have been some sort of a witch doctor, he used to put a little cube of goat's meat, I suppose it was, on a plate by the man's bedside and assure him that he'd been possessed by a devil, and when he woke up in the morning, if the meat turned black, it would mean that the devil had left him and gone into the meat, which undoubtedly had been doped by some means or other. There was one rather amusing incident on the first estate I was on Merton Estate, where I was learning the business. I was told that the dreaded figure, the visiting agent, a gentleman who came round different estates, varied a couple of times or three times a year to see that the estate was being properly managed and that sort of thing. And I was told all about this visiting agent who I hadn't met, as I had to go to muster. I don't quite know what happened. I set my alarm clock, as I always did, and went to bed. And I woke with a start before the alarm clock went off, which I didn't realize. And it was broad daylight, which gave me a most awful fright. I leapt out of bed, didn't look at the time, rushed up to the labor lines, which were 100 yards away, went banging on doors on a stick. There was nobody awake or stirring, and the night watchman was still fast asleep, and raised hell. Wouldn't have the people out to work when this dreaded visiting agent arrived. And it was gradually getting darker and darker, and when the night watchman eventually appeared with his lantern, I found, instead of being broad daylight, it wasn't 5 o'clock. It's just a bright moonlight night. It is there that I had a most amazing experience. The main town where the European Club was, called Seremban. It was some 25 miles away. And one evening, or one afternoon rather, I got on my motorcycle and went into Seremban to do something or other, shopping I suppose, and went up to the club. Oh, it'd be early in the afternoon, I imagine, round about tea time. And the club was the usual place with a big lounge where the members and their ladies sat and chatted, and there was a bar which was strictly for men only, with a very large oval bar behind which the Chinese boys served the drinks. And there was only one other man in the club, and I was standing facing him with my left elbow leaning on the counter, and my friend was in the reverse position. We were chatting to each other, and all of a sudden I felt a large squashy hand on my left shoulder and looked round to my left, and there was the face of a not quite fully grown tiger rubbing his cheek against mine. And when I nearly had a fit, but didn't quite, and the tiger seemed quite friendly. And the other man said, "Oh, that belongs to a man called Ryers. It's his pet." And he was then in the ladies' room, and the tiger just wandered across into the bar. And the Chinese boy looked distinctly startled, and the tiger got down from my shoulder and wandered round the bar and found the usual opening hatch where the boy could get in and out from behind the bar, and went through it, and the Chinese boy walked away with increasing speed, and so did the tiger, and they went round and round the inside of the bar in circles. And presently Mr. Rives arrived and summons the tiger. It was a remarkable tiger, because he had it as a pet at home, and he taught it not to chase chickens, and it is very, very friendly. Later, I believe, it was sent to Whipsnade Zoo, but I can't remember the name it had there now. Well, after 3 years on that estate. I went home on leave and made contact with the firm of Harrison and Crossfields, who own very many estates in Malaya, or owned very many estates in Malaya, and I got a job on Bradwell Estate near the town of Seremban in Negrisimbilan. And there were three assistants on that estate besides the manager, and my first main employment there was in the rubber factory. Work started at daylight and carried on for 8 hours. That was until about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. But it was rather strange. When I first started planting, it meant that I got up at 5:30 and would go up to the muster ground or parade ground, which was in the building site of the lines, and all the labourers would be assembled and names called out and sent off to various jobs. But it was rather a relief when daylight savings was introduced, 1/2 hour of daylight savings, because it meant I got up instead of 5:30 at 6 o'clock. It was exactly the same time, but it seemed better. One labourer at Klang got grabbed by a crocodile bathing in the Klang River, but fortunately he had friends with him who managed to pull him away. But both there and later at Sungiboya, where I was, which was a part of Teledato Estate, which Teledato was a part of Sungiboya. Sungiboya means Crocodile River, and there were lots and lots of crocodiles that were called the Boya Mass, which means the golden crocodile. You probably know in the crocodile's tail is serrated, and every other serration was a bright yellow. That was how they got their name. While I was at Teledato as manager of it, before it became a part of Sungiboya, it was hit by a cyclone. Now, I was in my bungalow, which was on practically on the edge of the main road, and I didn't know a thing about it. Didn't hear anything in particular, which has always amazed me, particularly as I've shown you a photograph of it.